So, for those that just joined us during the sit, we are going to have, I'm going to talk a little bit about rapture, kind of frame everything, and then we're going to have a discussion, maybe about 15 minutes, and then we're going to have a longer Q&A. So we'll take a break after I do a little bit of framing, I guess, probably better than summary. So rapture, mostly when we think about rapture, we hear it from this Christian idea of the end times and this joyous transcendent that can come upon Christ's return. But that is not what rapture is pointing to in Dhamma. Rapture is a blissful feeling in the body. It's a pleasant experience in the body. Or I saw this definition that said, rapture is an overwhelming emotion. And you could think of it as like an overwhelming emotion, something very pleasurable, like sex, you know, and like when you fall in love or you get something really good happen to you, and then you have all this joy that gets connected to it in the mind, and the body feels great. And we generally associate that kind of rapturous feeling with something good happening to us. So unless something good happens to us, we don't think rapture is possible. And it's not uncommon. I mean, Buddha had the same problem. I talked last week about how he went first to deep concentration. And in deep concentration, he had all these rapturous experiences because deep concentration brings this kind of pleasurable feeling in the body. And then it didn't work, though. He's still suffering. And so he left it and went to the Jains, which is the opposite. It's like a hardcore ascetic practicing, and you know, he at some point said he was down to a grain of rice a day, and that he could feel he could stick his finger in his belly hole and feel his spine. I mean, he was pretty emaciated and dying, basically, when he realized he was doing something wrong and that there may be another way he could actually practice. And that's when he tried what he later coined the middle way. And at some point he said that as he was practicing this middle way, so he's given up the deep concentration, he's given up the, you know, just suffer until you, you know, make it. And now he's on this middle path and he's investigating everything that happens. That's really what the middle way is. We investigate everything. We try to understand what's happening in the mind. And this calm, this transcendental 12 links that we're going to talk about over the course of this year, we're like at number 4. This experience is what helps us begin to understand where suffering comes from. And when you understand where suffering comes from, you can free yourself from it. There's no question that you can't free yourself from any kind of suffering if you understand where it's coming from. And then he said in some discourse he gave that he would have these pleasurable feelings and he was trying to not have them. And he even asked himself, why do I turn away from pleasurable experiences that I'm not making happen? So there's no good thing happening that's causing these pleasurable feelings, and yet he's having these pleasurable body experiences. And so he questioned why he would reject something that's clearly naturally arising. And that is the point I want to make on this last kind of night with rapture. That this is not something that you don't need some good thing to happen in order to begin to experience rapture. You don't need it to be a great thing happen. You don't even need a great sit. You just have to be interested in your bad sit in order for it to happen, right? Because if you are interested in it, something begins to happen when we get interested in anything. We stop trying to fix it. We stop trying to do something to make it better. That notion, I like the way the Tibetans say, they say that this tanha, which is grasping, they call it the urge to correct. That's what it is. Just tweak it, just a little. It's a good sip, but it could be better. And so we get caught in this trap of trying to tweak it and make it better, make it to what the mind thinks that sit should be. And because we are trying to tweak it, tweak it, tweak it, we're trying to tweak it towards something we don't even know what it is, then we miss it. Every time we miss it, every time we have maybe a okay sit, but it was better than last time. So that's good enough. That's as good as we can get. And this is so not necessary. I think what the Buddha is pointing to in these first, so for those of you that are new, the Buddha noticed that there are 12 sort of, we called them links, but 12 kind of steps that lead to suffering. And that at some point, if you stop following those 12 steps that lead to suffering and you turn and go the other direction, then there are 12 steps that lead to awakening. But this turning and going in the other direction is a little bit of a misnomer, because the direction that leads to suffering is trying to get away from it. So the 12 steps that lead to awakening is turning towards it. Are we clear? It's kind of weird here, but you got to turn into it. And the 12 links start with faith. This faith, in that moment, when you really want to run away from something, you turn into it and have this faith in your practice that you can begin to understand it. Not fix it, not change it, not come up with the right solution, but that you can understand what's happening here, because nothing that happens to us is random. It's not random. Something has happened because of a conditioning, because of a flow. And if you don't see what that flow is, then you just keep repeating the same flow over and over and over, trying to get a different result. And so instead, you want to turn into it with this faith that says, okay, let me take a look at this. Let me have a whole new look on this. And when you turn in with this faith, the first thing that comes is joy. It's that you're still in the difficulty, but joy comes. The joy is not, it's a mental kind of, it's a mental, I would almost say that there's an uplift just because you are going to practice with this. just because you've turned towards something. There, it all, it, it's like the best way I could think of it. This is gonna really sound strange, but when somebody is at their in with drugs and alcohol, that's it. I mean, they're at rock bottom. They cannot do this anymore. They have to change. And then somebody says, come with me and we can go get into a treatment plan. I've seen it in so many defendants when they actually find out they have a bid, or they actually find out that they're going to be admitted into a treatment program. Even though they are at their worst moment, there's an uplift in that. There's this possibility that I can get over this. I can get past this. And that possibility is what I think joy is pointing to. It's not pointing to the joy that something good's going to happen. It's possibility, the joy that this suffering will end. That's where the joy is. And then with that joy comes rapture. In meditation, we talked about this last week, but in meditation, rapture is like PT. It is a pleasurable feeling in the body that comes because you are gradually steadying your attention on your object. You're steadying your attention on the object. So if I were to take the same scenario, what this process is in meditation, because it's very different in meditation than ordinary life. In meditation, you are at your wit's end about thinking. You want to stay with this object. Okay, I'm staying with it. That's it. I'm staying with it. And you keep noticing the mind gets lost in thought, but you get more and more and more determined to stay. And even 3 breaths, you're getting joyous. That is 3 breaths. And longer and longer, and you start having this joy. And then as you really want to stay with this object, I mean it. I'm staying with it. That builds this kind of pleasure in the body, that we begin to actually feel this great pleasure that we're staying with the object. And that kind of determination and faith is what is needed. And the energy that is produced is this energy that PT is the energy that helps you stay. So you have to really want to stay with your object, or that PT doesn't come, because you're kind of like, I want to be with the breath. But this story, wait, let me just live this out for a moment and then we'll get back to it. And that kind of haphazard way of trying to stay with the breath, you don't actually get the momentum of PT. But when you began to stay right there, the mind's going to be thinking, and you're like, nope, we're not going there. Not what? Nope, not taking any more exits. Staying right here in the highway. Then this PT comes, and it's like the wind under your wings to help you stay there. And it feels great. So like if you're sitting and you feel achy or sore or, you know, just all this pain in the knee and all of this, it's very hard to stay concentrated. But as you get more determined to stay with your object and you don't get caught up in all the other hindrances, you know, the PT takes off and you have this great pleasure. In our ordinary lives, it looks a little different. It looks a little bit like you are turning towards some difficulty. You want to understand, here I am irritated again. Okay, what is going on here? And you turn towards it. And, you know, you might look at it for a little bit, like when I had my anxiety, I was saying that what I really just had was a 1 minute. That's all I had to stay was 1 minute. And granted, 1 minute wasn't really doing much with the anxiety. It would come right back, but it was getting me used to being with that anxiety. And then gradually I could stay with it longer and longer and longer. But the same thing is applying. You are steadying your attention. And what I think begins to happen, this felt sense of joy that you're practicing with it, or this joy, this uplift in the mind, as you begin to see things, you get what I would call a rapt attention. It's a little different than when you're in, the concentration practice and meditation, but it's the same concept. You want to stay with this situation to understand it. You're more interested in understanding the irritation than you are in trying to get rid of it and trying to make it go away. And there's something pleasurable about that. Even when it is an unpleasant feeling, it can be this sense of, oh, you know, I think I'm learning something about this. And the slightest movement from, you know, you may not believe me, but I used to be a rageaholic. So sort of like the slightest little thing my sons would do, my kids would do, and boom, I would be like screaming and yelling at everybody, cussing and screaming. And I never thought that rage would ever go away. Never. Because I had to manage it and maintain it so I didn't swing on nobody at work, things like that, right? So I would try my best to just keep it under control. And yet on the inside, I am livid all the time. And so when I started turning towards this rage to get to know it, I would bust out and start laughing. Because some of it was almost comical. So I started telling people at work, I feel anger energy around. And they would say, Tori, why don't you just say you're angry? Well, I can't say I'm angry because I don't know whose anger it is. But there's anger around. I can feel it. I just came up with all kinds of ways to be able to let that anger be in the space and not get intimidated by it, not try to make myself not angry, not try to fix the anger, try to understand it. That's what this transcendental dependent co-arising is. In the moment that rage comes, I need to try to understand it. And so these moments of anger would become these opportunities for me to learn a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And every time I passed some little hurdle, I could feel it in the body, this kind of pleasurable experience, knowing that there was these little changes happening. And I can remember one time I stayed with that anger. I stayed with it and I went and laid down on my bed because I was so enraged. I went and laid down on the bed and I'm laying there. I'm so mad. And then I begin to notice that I was tightening my body up, tightening and tightening, and it was hurting so bad, and I'm tightening. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I'm doing that. I could just relax. I could just relax the arms. That's it. And I relaxed the arms and no more pain. I almost lost it. I was laughing so hard because I didn't realize that I was tightening and that is why it was hurting so much. But every time I would get angry, I would tense up and tighten up and tighten up, and I'd get angrier and angrier and tighter and tighter. Oh, I couldn't believe it. I just lost it. I was laughing so hard. And I was mad at my nephew. And he calls in and says, Auntie, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. Just having a moment. But those, I never would have known that if I hadn't been willing to steady my attention and watch this anger. Can you see? It's liberating, not because you get rid of it, but because you understand it. And the more you understand it, the more you will be able to see what is called, the Buddha called, the escape from suffering. And we'll talk more about this next month, but in the tranquility, this first part, this faith and joy and rapture, is what you need to even be willing to look at something. You need some kind of an emotional uplift that gives you this courage to look at it. And then you'll soften up and begin to see it with more clarity as it goes. But that's where we're at. We're at the joy that comes, or the rapture. It's actually joy in the body. So, but it's rapture that comes with this bodily, this feeling. Let me see if there's anything else I wanted to say. I think what I really want to talk about, what I want you to talk about for a few minutes, is, do you believe this? Do you believe it? I mean, you could say, no, I don't believe it. I cannot envision any kind of joy when I'm upset. That's just not, the two are not going together. I can't feel that. I can't believe it. And then I want you to just, you think, talk to each other about moments when you have practiced and you noticed something, right? You noticed something about you or habit or the practice, your response, your reactivity. You noticed something, right? So just talk a little bit about things you've noticed. And then lastly, you don't have to talk about it in this order. You can talk about only one of them. But the last thing I want you to really consider is, have you ever seen yourself not respond in your normal way? And where do you think that comes from? So you know how we have a habit way of responding, and then something happens, and we don't do that. How come? How come we don't do that? What is that saying to you, that there is moments when instead of being your usual reactive way, you don't make that happen. It just kind of happens out of the blue. It's a little shocking sometimes. But what is that? And that's what I want us to talk about. Just whether or not you even believe this kind of rapture is possible. Whether or not, you know, you have had moments when you seen the practice work, and then moments when you don't even respond the way you normally would. So that's the kind of things, or you can talk about pretty much anything you want to say about it. Just, I want you to talk about rapture. And it's important that you talk about it in relationship to someone else. So everybody's a practitioner here, no matter what your level is. If you've practiced with the sit, that's it. You listen to the Dhamma talk, officially, you are a practitioner. Just in case you might think, oh, but I'm not really a practitioner. Yes, you are. And so you do have thoughts and feelings about what I'm saying. And so listening to two other people, we're going to try to do it in threes, listening to two other people share their thoughts. This is part and parcel of how we understand and learn the Dhamma. We read it, we practice it, and we listen to the voice of another. And so we're going to break up into groups of three and take a break here, and we'll come back at about, I don't know, about seven after. And then, and then we'll break up into threes and talk. a little bit. So let's see if there's anything that's come out of your discussion that you'd like to share, or if you have any questions or anything. If you're in the hall, we have to have a mic so that the people online can actually hear what we're saying. We're just, for those of you that just came in the room, we're going to do a little bit of a, see how, what came out of the groups and see if there's any questions.
Actually, this is from your talk.
Oh, okay.
So, because at one point we're talking about concentrating on the breath and getting concentrated, and then there's that, we don't want to get lost in the story, but we're observing the story, we're letting it play out, but not being caught in it. That's the kind of my experience.
So when you're talking about meditating, you want to steady your mind. What keeps us from being caught in stories is your mind is actually steady. So you're not watching the story at all. You're trying to put your attention on a very simple, basic object that's arising in the present moment, and keep bringing it back to that object. So there's all the stuff that starts happening in the mind. It starts talking and stories and images, and you want to learn to ignore that, to stop getting caught by it. When your mind is steady, so when you actually can follow the breath, you can have a story playing and you won't pay attention to it. You don't have to stop yourself from thinking, but you have to stop yourself from being pulled by that thinking and be able to steady your attention on the breath and stay there with it. So when you're meditating, you're trying to cultivate that kind of stable mind, but you're not trying to create that stable mind for just the purpose of, oh, look, I can follow the breath. That isn't really what you're doing. You're training your mind how to stay present even when you're walking about doing things, how to stay present with some difficulty.
Yes.
You see, so the meditation is not the awakening path.
Right.
The meditation is what helps us learn how to steady the mind. And so you need a mind that's active. Should I say that again? You need a mind that's active so you can keep ignoring it. And the more you do that, the stronger the mind gets towards steadying itself.
Because sometimes my experience is I am concentrated, and then I guess you could call it an insight of, oh, that's how I do that. You know, I'm not caught in the story, but going, oh, well, that's pretty simple.
You know? Yes, that's right. And those insights, you know, they're like knowings that just kind of arise, right? And so when those insights arise, careful not to get caught in them, because once the mind figures out that you like insights.
Yeah.
And it will be like, what about this?
And there is a certain amount of pride that comes with
that's
that.
Right.
Oh,
that's
I am
right.
So wise,
I
you know.
I know.
So I'm glad I'm not that wise.
Yeah, that's right. No, but you're right to question whether or not we need to stay with the breath. You don't need to stay with the breath, but sometimes I think we leave the breath too soon before the mind is really steady, because we want to work out our difficulties. So you want to stay with that. If you keep getting pulled towards some story, you need to stay with the breath a little bit longer. Because what you want the capacity to do is imagine that that story is playing out over there at that back wall, and you're sitting here and you aren't engaged with it. You're just sitting here watching this, like two people talking you don't even know. But if you keep tumbling into trying to figure it out, then your mind's not steady enough. And you need to use the anchor to help build that steadiness. Yeah, good. Was there another one? Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Okay. So I really appreciated, Tweri, that you raised the issue of the word rapture in our society. And for some of us, that has a lot of baggage. Yeah. And so just hearing that, you know, it's like throwing a wrench in the works. But the way that you talked about it really helped. And I can't remember how you talked about it, but I feel better.
And, That's it. That's good, Dhamma.
And then my mind went to Wrapped, the Wrapped. Origin, and then Raptor. We start talking, you know, eagles. But a sort of a rapt attention.
Yeah, rapt attention.
And a curiosity.
You stay with it. Right.
Yeah, and that curiosity. So that really helped me that you brought that up. Thank you.
Yeah. Because we don't have a natural inclination to stay with difficulty. Everything in us says, if something feels bad or feels unpleasant, or if something is what we would consider a bad thing happening to us, we need to fix that. We need to make it right. And the mind will be screaming bloody murder at you that you need to do something about this and fix it. But you're actually trying to stay with this this difficulty, this unpleasantness. And the more you can stay with it, not out of force, but out of interest and curiosity, that's when you start really learning some really unbelievable things about the human mind and the human conditioning. Yeah, go ahead. And then we'll come to you.
One question that came up in our group, Tweri, was whether or not this quality, this rapture, can arise outside of meditation.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
In our daily life. And also does, like, the concept of a flow state that might get into sometimes in this, you know, whether, you know, some very intense activity that requires all of your concentration. Is there a relationship to rapture in that as well?
Yes, that's what I think. That's what I'm pointing to, is that you can call it the flow state. It's not the same as the PT is in concentration. Because the PT in concentration, when you're not doing anything, then it's easier to see our habits and our part in it. So you want to, that's why meditation is so important, is because you gradually begin to see you're not doing anything. Why am I so upset? Or why is this stuff happening? Why am I so in so much pain, all this anger? You almost have to do nothing in order to see it. Otherwise, if you're doing anything, you will mistakenly think the thing you're doing is what's making it, but it's not. And so learning to practice and steadying yourself with the meditation helps. That's the same thing that flow is. You've let go of trying to do something, and you're just with the experience itself, and then you can see some things. Good.
I think I had a pretty similar experience to this. I went through a tough time at work, and I found myself ruminating about a few relationships and, like, the conflict between us. And it was happening so much that I finally saw that I was ruminating and thinking about it. And then once I realized that, I was like, oh, and I went down into my body and started to feel whatever breath or whatever. And then, you know, catch myself thinking, and I was like, oh, there it is. And I would fall back down. And that would happen over and over and over. And I had this feeling of I'm seeing myself thinking.
Yes.
And then I was on Instagram and I saw a post that said something about metacognition, where you start to see yourself thinking. That's what metacognition, I guess, means. So it feels a little like metacognition. I don't know really what it really means, but
yeah,
that's what's coming up for me.
I don't know the word metacognition, but what you, the reason why we need to see ourselves thinking, because we don't know we're thinking. We're thinking all the time. It's just the way we were raised. It's the way culturally we were taught. We see a picture of a bird, and then we are told that's a bird, and this is how you spell it. So we have concepts that are glued together, and we don't realize that most of our knowing comes from the concept that the mind is telling us, not the direct experience of it. This is why John Kabat-Zinn's research he did 30 years ago was mind-blowing, because he was the first person to prove, and he had to do it with meditators, people who knew how to steady their attention. He proved that people had more pain based on their fear of having pain than the actual pain itself. And the way he did that was he took this like wand, he called it a wand, but it's like a curling iron, and he would put it up against someone's skin. And they had to tell him, they had to tell the researcher what the number of heat was. So is this 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and what, and how long could they stay there? So if it was a 1, how long could you stay? 2, how long could you stay? 3, and it would get hotter and hotter and hotter. And they would put it in different places and do this. They had this whole structure. And it was took a long time, a lot of research. I remember when they were trying to get all these meditators to come and do this research with them. And what he proved was that in the beginning, if you thought that wand was hot, people would be like out here, be like, oh, that's a 7. That's a 7 right there. I can't take it much more. But once they would meditate and settle the mind, they would know that that's more like a 1. And it would get closer and closer and closer. And they'd be like, yeah, it's a little hot, but it's okay. It's okay. And then they could get much closer with the heat, because they could feel the heat and they knew whether it was going to burn them. But when they thought that it was going to burn them, then they did not want that wand very close at all. So it was mind-blowing what he did. And that's sort of what you're saying, you're pointing to. When we start settling the mind down and steadying the mind, you actually start getting interested in what's happening. Like, you get interested in, why does the mind keep jumping up into that? And even if I pull it back down, it jumps right back up there. What is that? And it's usually pointing to, the body is trying to get rid of the emotional energy that you don't need anymore, because you're not at work and you're not in the conversation. So the body wants to just shake it off, like, I don't need all that excess energy. But every time the body tries to bring that energy up to let go, the mind grabs the story in relation to it. And we go to the story rather than just feel the uncomfortableness in the body. So when you start noticing that ruminating, it's telling you that the body is trying to let go of something. And you need to settle down in the body and feel that discomfort until the body has let it go. And then the thoughts won't come. So that kind of willingness to stay with it is what's going to help you begin to see the escape from all that ruminating. It doesn't make the sensations of the difficulties you're having with your coworkers all lovey-dovey. That's not the happy part. The part that is happy is as you start seeing that the ruminating is letting go and the body starts relaxing, because you're actually letting go of that excess energy.
And that's rapture.
Mm-hmm. So the comment was asked, is that rapture, what I'm saying? Rapture is the pleasant feeling that comes with that realization. So we have these realizations of, that's why I wanted you to talk about moments when, first of all, you think the practice, you know, you have these moments when the practice is working with you. But then some of us are like, no, I've never had any moments where the practice is working. So, okay, have you ever had a moment where you didn't do something that you normally would do? Tell me about that. So that feeling that we feel so pleasurable when we have a realization that the practice is free, that's the escape of some difficulty.
And rapture did come up in that.
Yeah, so rapture did come up in that experience with the coworkers. Okay, great.
So I thought I knew what I was doing, but now I'm, after the last two answers, I'm completely like thrown off. So first of all, I thought rapture was something very physical, like you feel like tingling or you feel like something physical in body.
But it is.
But what you just say is a bit different. It's a realization that it works. Like you have a moment like, whoa, like I'm doing something different. I mean, I'm not my usual self and I'm a better self because I feel the effect of the practice. But yes. It's not necessarily like your body is like tingling or your, right? Like,
yes, it feels tingling in the body when we have this realization that something worked. It's not at the intensity of concentration, rapture and concentration, because when you're in rapture with concentration, it is concentrated. It's right there. There's nothing else going on except the body sensations.
Okay. Because that's so... Now I would, because in the discussion I said like I don't feel this ever happened to me, but now I realize it happened.
Yes.
Like many times. And one time it happens, it's also in contradiction to the first question. So I know like when you remember past situations, like past memories, and you are like, you know, like, oh, I should have said that, or it should have been this way. Like this is not the sort of things you want to exercise in your meditation. But when I meditate and I get to a certain level of concentration, those scenes like can come back, but it's like it's not me. It's like they come back like a completely, like I'm completely third party, and I observe the thing very like in a third party way. And a lot of time I see it as like, okay, I could have demonstrated more kindness, or that wasn't a wholesome like reaction, or and it's like I'm. So there are several things that happen. Like it's like I have like this kind of rapture, I guess, on the moment because it's kind of too late. But I'm learning on the spot, and I'm like, okay, next time I feel like I'll react differently, and that happens usually. And also, it's unlocking something like, you know, usually asking for forgiveness or realizing something went wrong. And it was like part of my fault, and I would be very, you know, like tense, and I refuse to. Acknowledge
that's right. The breath.
But then I will exit the meditation. I would be like, I will send right away like a text or a message saying like, I'm sorry about what happened, something like that. And that would be a moment also where I feel like, okay, this is almost. I mean, this feels like the meditation, the practice is like correcting. I'm correcting myself. So is that also what rapture would be?
Yes, it's sort of this. I want you guys to hear it like this. There is a factor, a jhana factor called piti. And the jhana factor of piti is a specific experience in the body of tingling and this really pleasurable experience. And it is for... It is coming for deep concentration, and you need these five factors to come together, and when they're balanced, that's what makes jhana. That's what people normally think when they think PT, when they think rapture. They think, oh, jhana. But jhana, rapture itself, this kind of capacity to stay with the experience, that is not necessarily cultivating jhana. That's cultivating the capacity to stay with it. So like you say, you're in your meditation and your mind is getting relaxed and steady. Something can come up. It could be unpleasant, and yet you're feeling pleasant watching it, knowing you're seeing something. You can even feel the unpleasantness of it, but I don't know how to describe it, but it sounds a little, you know, sadistic, you know? There's kind of like a pleasure connected to the knowing and understanding of something unpleasant. And that, so when you get off the phone, it's not the fact that you then go and email the person and say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. It's the realization that you have, whether you get off the phone and respond to someone or not. But I think you're adding where we're going next month, which is tranquility. And tranquility is this calm abiding. And that calm abiding is when you can say, okay, this is what I did. And you can actually admit it, actually say something like you're saying. Usually we'd be like, no, I didn't do it. I didn't do it wrong. This was the best I could do. But then there's this calm abiding that can come and we can see, and then you can actually respond to it in an appropriate way. So that calm abiding is what comes that helps us with this contentment, with even seeing our bad habits. The rapture part is this, the only way I can think of it in our ordinary life is a rapt attention, an attention that's completely curious and interested in this. And for concentration, it feels much more joyous. But there is a kind of joy in the body, even when we see things that don't work, you know, things that aren't necessarily the best side of us, but we see it and we're like, oh, I see. And that you almost feel the escape of it. So I don't want to give the impression that the only place rapture shows up is in jhana, because it does show up in jhana and it has a unique way about it. But this idea that you stay with something and get interested in it, in this rapt attention kind of way, and you're not trying to tweak it and fix it and make it better, that's what I'm calling rapture in the PT, in this transcendental co-arising.
Thank you. I feel better. Thank you.
Larry, there's a question online.
Okay, go ahead while we're getting the mic passed. Go ahead, Kim.
Thank you. I love this. Love this. Thank you all. The fluidity of an anchor in my life is something that I'm exploring in the last 2 weeks, because I keep witnessing and then I go into the story and then I start to pull out of it. And I wanted to know if you could say a little bit about that, you know, kind of being able to tap into different anchors as we're witnessing in order to bring ourselves back.
Yep. Buddha had, so you know, he did four foundations. And in those four foundations, there are 13 different anchors. 13 plus 9, whatever that is, if you count all the death meditations. So he never, somehow we got it to this point that it has to be the breath, but it doesn't. Sometimes the breath doesn't work because your mind is too busy and you can't really stay with the breath, but you might stay with the feeling tones as to whether or not it's pleasant or unpleasant or kind of neutral. Or you might be able to stay with the elements. If your mind is very, very busy, like mine is sometimes, I will just note whether or not I think that's earth or wind or fire or air, you know, and just note the elements of it. It's, there are a myriad of anchors, and you don't have to find one, but whatever anchor you pick for that sit, you got to stay with that one. Because if you keep switching the anchor because you think there's a better one, you know you're training the mind on how to get you out of this process. So it will keep, you know, convincing you that the breath would be better. Oh, sound. I bet sound is better. There's so much sound going on. And you'll keep switching. So whatever anchor you pick, stay with that anchor for the sit. But then the next sit, try a different one and see. And get interested on what anchors, like I learned that standing in front of the sink and washing dishes was the best anchor for my busy mind. And so even when I was, a lot of my meditation was standing in front of the sink washing dishes. And then once I washed them all, I put them on the other side and washed them all over again. Put them on the other side and washed them all over again. Because I learned that the combination of the warm water and the soap and the just the whole process, the movement of it was much more, I could stay with that when I was angry. So you enjoy and have fun looking for different kinds of anchors and thank practicing you with them.
Thank you. I'll stop switching up to all the different ones.
That's right. Wow.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Let's see, in the back or over here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you've touched on this like couple of times a little bit, but if you could help me distinguish between, because when we talk about joy, there's also a good feeling in the body. So how do you distinguish between joy and rapture?
I think joy is in the mind and rapture is in the body. So joy is a mental kind of uplift. It is what it's part of the gladdening of the mind. So it's sometimes why you see those Buddha images where he has this half smile. Because there's a kind of a uplift. Even when you're sitting there and you're feeling the body's not happy, the mind is busy, you want to have a uplift and gladden the mind. And that's the joy that's mental. And as that mental joy, you just keep kind of softening and gladdening the mind. Then you start getting interested, and that's when the rapture, this physical, it drops down in the body, and the body feels okay sitting here. See? Good.
Hi, Tori.
Hi.
I guess I have this one experience where initially I was angry, confused with this person, right? And I was just observing that because there was a lot of betrayal. I didn't understand why he did what he did. And I was just trying to observe that feeling and just sit with it. And then instead of like a rapture or joy, it almost, I felt kind of like, oh, he was scared. Maybe that's why he behaved like that. And suddenly, maybe it was compassion or me just seeing him as a little boy for doing that.
Yeah.
Is that rapture? Like, I feel, yeah, like I kind of get that, but it wasn't joy, but I felt that release of compassion. Is that a good way to say rapture as well?
So it is and it isn't. Let me try to help you. So what you described is more of the whole transcendental path. This transcendental co-arising, what the Buddha saw is that things are conditional. Before the Buddha's wisdom, there's no Buddha wisdom in the world. We don't know what that feels like because we have the wisdom of a Buddha in the world. But before the Buddha became the Buddha, there was no sort of understanding. And so the idea was that anything bad that happens to you, it's your fault. You got to fix it. You did something wrong. You made God mad. You messed up in a previous life. Something you did wrong. And so the Buddha realized that we would continue to do the exact same habit over and over and over and over forever. We will not stop because the habit that does this is not alive. It's just like a virus. We talked about this last week, right? So what you did, so the habit part that gets us stuck in that is the co-arising. Something happens. He showed up. He did something. And it co-arises with this habit of anger and boom, boom, boom every time. That's what happens. There is a similar habitual thing that is transcendental. It co-arises also. So at that moment when this happened, you could have tumbled into your normal way of being mad. You might have even tumbled a bit in that. But then at some point, the practice and the faith of it turned you towards it and you steady yourself. And then there is this release. That process, the way you're describing, happened over about maybe, say, 10, 20 minutes. We've taken that 20 minutes and we stretched it out for an entire year. You see what I'm saying? So do I think there was rapture in there? Yes, I do. It's just very quick. It's just this kind of faith to pause for a minute, stop, and then stay there with this to get to this understanding that it might just be that he's scared, right? Yet to get to that. But then you realize it's not about you. He has his own problems to work out. And it may very well be that his fear is not the best place to be around when he gets afraid. So you have to readjust things. But the knowing of where it comes from is how we get free. Instead of angrily pushing back, trying to make him not be the way he's being. Do you see? So that is rapture there. It's not like when you're meditating. It's not that kind of rapture. But there is this ability. Rapture had to be there as you were just steadying with your own upset. And yet you're not trying to fix it. You're just steady with it until you come to an understanding that you can release yourself from it and realize it's not about you. And you release and let it go. And there's no dukkha there. When we get stuck in it, we are stuck back in the bewilderment of it. Good. That's a good question to end on. But if yours is quick, well, okay.
So I'm curious. Rapture is not a long-term state of being. Like, no. You can't, right? And so I appreciate that idea that this is a quick experience. I think talked about a little bit in this in my own meditation practice. There is a moment that feels like my body is just filled with light, and it's this grounded, beautiful wholeness of like when I see a beautiful bird outside that makes me happy. But I don't get to stay in that forever. Yeah. But it's that recognition in that moment and being able to recognize that that's what's happening.
Yes, it's actually momentary. And sustained. The sustained rapture is what moves us into jhana with the other four factors, jhana factors. You can sustain that rapture and sustain the contentment and the steadying of your attention. That's what leads to jhana, deep concentration. But most rapture that we deal with in our ordinary lives is momentary. That's okay. And that momentary rapture is really just what gets us into this willingness to stay. And then we're going to go into this kind of tranquility next month, and then this contentment. We're steady with it, and we're actually building up for disenchantment and dispassion. I think okay. I'm going to give at least one talk on those two. I feel sorry for everybody who was like, are we going to have to talk about disenchantment and dispassion? I'm like, yes, you do. Yes.
Thank you.
It's very important. All righty. Well, this was great. Really good. I'm glad that we had these 2 weeks together. And I hope you are willing to give yourself some joy in practice. Enjoy some of this. Even the difficulties, enjoy some of the difficulties, enjoy some of the things you're seeing, and gradually that interest is going to grow. And it's like steadying your attention in your ordinary life with just some experience that happens is also what helps you steady your attention when you're meditating. You have to learn how to steady our attention. Steadying your attention in your meditation is going to help you steady your attention in your ordinary life. So the two of them are kind of bouncing off of each other, and that's what you want to do. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to keep practicing. That's it. So good. Is there any announcements? I don't think so. We don't usually have announcements on a talk night, a discussion night. So thank you all. Please do give Donna to Seattle Insight. Donna, be in generosity. Be generous with Seattle Insight, because I want us to grow and I want us to be able to do more things. So be as generous as you can with Seattle Insight. And thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you. Oh, does anyone need a ride home? Almost forgot we do that. You guys online? You don't need a ride home? Okay, everybody's good. All right. See you next week.